Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
Oh, I found Jesus. This is a special day. And as fascinating as that is, I'm like an apartment building where you have to buzz to come upstairs on the intercom.
And now, today's episode.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning. Good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. That in itself is true. Going to the zoo this weekend. Yeah, I like going to the zoo. It's good exercise because you walk around a lot. But there isn't much else to do other than look at animals. And I guess that's what zoos do. I don't know. I don't really see the point. I look at it from the viewpoint of the animals who are walking around in an enclosed area with a lot of human beings gawking at them. It's kind of embarrassing for me. It's kind of weird when a giraffe looks back at you and you know the giraffe is thinking to itself, what the hell is up with this guy? Why is this guy staring at me? I'm standing here chewing grass and this guy's staring at me. What an odd thing for this. What kind of human race is this? This doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. I enjoy watching the monkeys because they look human, but they're not. So we think, oh, that's interesting. We look at the animals that seem more like us, but they're not, trying to make some connection to these little things that fling crap all over the place and wallow in their own feces. I mean, what the hell's going on? When I was growing up, one of my friends had an ant farm, and I remember saying to him, why are you farming ants? What the hell's wrong with you? I do a lot of what the hell's wrong with you to people that, hi, how you doing? I'm fine. Let me ask you a question. What the hell's wrong with you? I do enjoy going to the zoo. It's a reason for me to be outside. I have no purpose being outside otherwise. I don't farm. I don't have an ant farm. I don't mow the lawn. There's no reason for me to be outside. There just isn't. There's a lot of stuff for me to do inside. Outside, not so much. So I'm going to the zoo for that reason, also because it's really easy to spell. Sounds exactly like it's spelled, and I like that in a place. So I'm going to the zoo. First thing that's amazing when you go to the zoo is that you have to pay to go in there. I know they have to take care of the animals, but $700 to go to the zoo? Seriously? I know it's not that much for seniors. The first thing I do when I get into the zoo is I look for a place to eat a hot dog. I love hot dogs, and I look for any excuse in the world to eat one. And going to a ball game, which I don't do, or some type of a barbecue, which I don't go to because these things are outside. When I go to a zoo, I just feel like destroying my insides. So I get my hot dog and I start walking around and looking at the animals. And I do feel odd about it. I do feel odd about it. It's I love animals. I love them. I adore them because they're helpless. It's the human beings that won't shut up. Roosters are annoying. I can't deal with roosters. They look at me and they're out to annoy me. Like they I don't know what you call that thing, crowing, cooing, whatever it is. I mean, roosters just got to shut up. It's not getting you anywhere. Nothing's happening when you do that, roosters. Just be quiet. And for some reason, you feel like you got to do this at dawn, at like 5-6 o'clock in the morning. No, I'm afraid not. In my world, nobody makes noise like that at 6 o'clock in the morning. No, and I mean nobody. I stroll through the zoo. I enjoy myself. I do find the giraffes to be the most interesting animal because of their long necks. There's nothing that looks like a giraffe. And the giraffes are very, very tall. They're taller than the trees. And I find that to be an attribute for a giraffe. But at the same time, they don't really seem to do anything. They just stand there and chew something. I think they're chewing grass or something. I don't really know what giraffes eat. I'm not into this. This isn't my point. But they're just standing there just being giraffes. And then there's these groups of people that line the fence looking at this quite amazingly statured creature. Yes, indeed. But it's just, I feel weird staring. If you stare at a person and they look back at you, you know, you do that thing where, well, I wasn't looking at you. I'm looking over here. I wasn't looking at you. But with a giraffe, apparently, doesn't matter. We don't get embarrassed when a giraffe looks back at us like, what are you doing? Why are you staring at me? I am staring at you because you're a giraffe. Okay. Then I'm staring at you because you're an idiot. Well, I guess that works too. Sea lions. Are they fish? They seem to swim all the time underwater. Why aren't they fish? I know that whales are mammals. I learned that in school. It's all I learned. It's all I remember. But whales are mammals. But they spend all of their time under the water. Sometimes they'll come up for a little blowhole air. I don't get that. But to me, they're fish and they always will be fish. If you live in the water, you're a fucking fish. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I said fish. If you live out of the water, you're a mammal. Ron could be a reptile. No, mammal. Let's just clean this up. I don't care if you have a vertebrae or not. It doesn't really matter to me. A blowhole, a gills. I don't care. Okay. Let's just make it simple. Let's stop with this nomenclature stuff. I love the zoo. I love the zoo. My favorite animal is the deer because we call each other that. We do. Hi, deer. How are you doing today, deer? Thank you, deer. Thank you very much, deer. We use their name as an expression of affection. Good morning, dear. How is your night, dear? We're calling them an animal, is what we're doing. So we're very affectionate toward deers. That's how that transposed. And they are beautiful animals. When I was a child, I saw a movie called Bambi. I don't know what generation you're in. I frankly don't care. But you're aware that there was a Disney movie about a deer and Bambi was its name. I don't know where they got the word Bambi for a deer, but that was the deer's name. And we fawned over the deer. Ooh, that was funny. So when we see a deer, it's like, oh, look at the beautiful deer. And the males have antlers and things, you know? They're beautiful creatures. And in petting zoos, you can actually touch a deer. And get deer ticks all over your hands for free. I love the deers, but my immediate thought is, some people hunt deers with gigantic muskets and guns. And it's not like the deer is coming at you with an arsenal. They're just standing there with their children. And some human beings, they take aim and they shoot the deer like it's an accomplishment. No, it's not. The deer was not armed. Couldn't defend itself except to run away. And you shot the damn thing. And here I am at a zoo petting a deer, and I feel that the greatest enemy of the deer are people that look like me, wearing plaid hats, walking around with guns. Now look, some people love hunting. I don't, you know, fine, whatever. The deer population is out of control? I don't think so. It's not like I walk out of my house and go to the car and there's a deer standing there like blocking my way and opening the car door. It's not like that. It's not like the kids are going to school. Oh no, I can't get into the school. There's a deer standing at the front door, won't let me in. It's not like they're overpopulated in that sense. It's not like you look out the window and there's 72 deer standing there. It's not like that. Deers pretty much stay in the woods. They're a little skittish, although they don't have to be. They're good-sized animals. But they're respectful. They stay in the woods. They're properly timid of us. We are the ones that must be feared. I don't fear animals. I know you can get attacked by a bear. That happens. But you can get attacked by a guy, too. No, the most dangerous creature on the planet is the human being. The one that's the most highly evolved is the most dangerous. This thing called the human being actually creates weapons in order to take each other out. And I don't mean dating. We create situations that destroy the planet, the one place we have to live. It's not like moving or looking up on Zillow what planets are available to move to. This is it. This is all we have. Mars has not done construction on new homes yet. This is it, man. You can't go anywhere. And yet, the highly evolved human being decides not to do much about the planet, just let it evolve into shit. So, that's the most dangerous. And I feel for the animals, and I don't feel as much for the people. Because the people can stop anything they want to do if they just get together. This guy in the White House, I don't remember his name because I pay him no attention other than he ruining my life. But this guy in the White House has, whether it's his goal or not, because there's stupidity involved, so I don't know if this is on purpose or not, but seems to be dividing us as best he possibly can. What kind of human being are you? I believe that if he had a hangnail or something, that blood would not come out of him. I don't believe he's a warm-blooded animal. I think he's a fish. I think he has no emotions whatsoever except to love himself to the highest degree. If anybody disagrees with him, he tries to destroy them. A nice man. A very nice man. But that's not why I'm here today. I'm here to make money. I get paid to do this. And that's my goal. So that I can spread the love, as you can hear. No, the human being is the most dangerous thing on the planet. There's no question about it. Don't argue with me. You know it's true. Let's stop kidding each other. So I go to the zoo to be amongst those that are delicate and soft in this world. The little deer. Yes, even the annoying little rooster. I find them fascinating. They just stand there and do their thing. Now, granted, there is a pecking order involved with the animal kingdom. The lions actually do hunt in order to feed their family on other animals. There are many dead animal carcasses all over the place. I realize that, but I don't live in the jungle. I don't live in Africa right now, although I may move, get a condo. I see more carcasses on the road from cars hitting raccoons and beavers and deer. Man, deer get it from all ends, man. They get it from hunters, they get it from cars. Well, I think that's the deer's fault, though, because they have those signs, deer crossing, and I know deer can't read, so they actually have signs where there's just a picture of a deer trying to cross a road. Deers can understand that, but for some reason, the deers don't cross at those particular places where the signs are. Now, whose fault is that? It's got to be the deer. So, you know, I guess I discount that. And we do eat animals. I talk about this on the show all the time. I'll go to the aquarium, look at these beautiful aquatic creatures, and leave the aquarium and go across the street to a seafood restaurant and eat one of them. I'm not a wonderful person. I should be a vegan from Vegas. I don't know what that means. I shouldn't be eating things that breathe. I should be eating plants only. Just plants. Although it's not an exciting cuisine. I know. You can argue with me and say, hey, Ron, there's nothing wrong with eating from plants. That's really the way it should be. Well, I don't know the way it should be. I wasn't here at the beginning. I didn't read the rules. It's not in the Constitution. I have no idea. Animals are not mentioned in the Declaration of Independence, a small oversight on the Founding Fathers' part. I don't know. Did George Washington have a dog, a goat? I have no idea. When George Washington was crossing the Potomac, did the bottom of the boat kill any fish? I don't know. All I know is it's the human being that is the most dangerous on the planet. And I'm just going to take that to the bank because I got nothing else to take to the bank. Certainly don't have any money to take to the bank. That's not going to happen. How you doing, by the way? You doing all right? You know, I've just been talking and I haven't let you say a word. And that's very short-sighted of me. I have a short side. It's the left. I am concerned about you because I am made of jelly. I went to an island. I think it's called Castle Island. It's in the Boston Harbor. And I remember going there like years ago. And you get off the boat and you get onto the island and there's a big fort there and it's kind of fun. But I remember like looking in the water from the shore of this little island and it was littered with jellyfish. And when I say littered, I'm using a human phrase like plastic bottles washing up on the shore. There were like zillions of jellyfish. And when I was a child, it brought back memories when I was a little child, which is about the size of what a child is, little. Children are nothing but small, annoying people who haven't matured yet enough to know that they're small and annoying. But that's what they are. They're the large, annoying people of the future.
Someday, you small, annoying little thing, you will grow up and be a big, annoying little thing.
What's the constant? You're always annoying. Oh, we have love in our hearts. We go to church and we sit there and in unison, we're very proper, very civilized. As soon as you walk out of the church, the profanity starts slinging. You start yelling at people because they're in your parking space. It all goes out the window really fast. We're civilized, but we're really certainly not. We go to church and thou shalt not have sex with my neighbor. And you leave the church and you go right to your neighbor's house and you start banging the hell out of him. I mean, let's face it, we can't carry a tune for more than a minute. The guy in the White House is a good example of that. We don't get it. Human beings just don't get it. We're all on the same planet going through the same stuff. Some of us have more money than others. There's a division there. But beyond that, we're all like, it's the same journey for all of us. We live a certain amount of years. Some of us a lot shorter than that. Most of us not going beyond that limit. We're all in the same boat. We're just trying to enjoy this little trip here that we're taking. We're trying to enjoy the ride and feel good about ourselves. And yet, for some reason, we seem to take this path of ultimate destruction, misery, and stress. I mean, I don't get it. I think a lot of people that understand what I'm talking about don't get it. It's a phenomenal thing. And I just turn around and I'm at the zoo and I'm staring at a giraffe just standing there chewing the grass. It looks boring, but at the same time, the giraffe ain't hurting anybody. Just standing there doing its thing, chewing some grass, enjoying a nice little meal off the ground. I mean, and look at us. Look at what we do. Yeah, it's a little more exciting than chewing grass, but I think it's gone a little too far. All right, that's it. So I do remember when I was a little child, I'm sorry, I got away from that one. My mother brought me to the beach. Somehow I found my way home. We went to the beach, and I remember getting stung by a jellyfish, and it was so scary because these jellyfish, they're like transparent, unlike the government. You can just see their insides. And they're different sizes. It stung me in my ankle, and it hurt like a mother, like my mother hurt. Like my mother hurt when she gave birth to me. It was that kind of hurt, but in my ankle. It's like giving birth in my ankle. Okay, you get the idea. And it stung, and I'll never forget it. So when I see a jellyfish now, I freak. All right, that's enough. that'll be quite enough. Thank you very much, Ron. That would be all right. That'll be quite enough. All right, we've got a great guest coming up here in just a second. But in the meantime, I do love animals.
As a special surprise, thank you. Everyone listening to the Ron Van Dam Show today will receive a free photograph of Ron holding a ferret. Yeah, we don't know why he's holding a ferret either. But he's the boss. So there's the ferret. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Lorna Graham joins us now. This book is Presumption of Guilt, How the Kids for Cash Scandal Trampled Justice. Thanks for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Legal conversation is quite prominent these days.
Yes,
it is. So this book kind of fits right into the conversation. But tell us first about this, the Kids for Cash scandal.
Well, this was a nationwide scandal. It started in my former office. I was an assistant United States attorney, a federal prosecutor, and my some of my colleagues charged a juvenile court judge with taking money in exchange for jailing kids, basically. They promised to prove it. A national scandal ensued, and then when push came to shove, my office dropped the allegations. But that didn't stop the scandal. By then, it had been so ingrained in the national consciousness that it was embedded, even though there are no facts to support it.
Wow. How long ago was this?
The scandal erupted in January 2009. And after that, various prosecutions happened. The state government in Pennsylvania formed a commission to hold hearings in order to determine how they could prevent this from happening again, even though nobody proved it had happened in the first place. And most unusual was the Pennsylvania Supreme Court erasing approximately 6,000 adjudications of juvenile delinquents.
Oh, wow.
Because they presumed the scandal was real and they wanted to distance themselves from any perceived harm that the scandal caused, even though no one had the patience to presume this individual's innocence and wait for the government to prove its case. They just jumped to judgment.
Wow. Well, jumping to judgment is socially what we do, actually, all the time, I suppose.
Well, especially now in this day and age, yeah, with the digital media and everyone wanting instant notifications. But the criminal justice system takes time from the time of the accusations to the time of the trial. And during that time, the defendant is supposed to be presumed innocent under our Constitution, not presumed guilty and then sentenced for crimes he didn't commit.
Interesting. Is this something that is a concern state to state, or is it on a federal level, or both?
It's both. I actually have an introductory chapter discussing various prosecutions that and investigations that were inappropriately brought and pursued.
Yeah.
One, like the senator from Alaska, Ted Stevens, he was running for re-election, but he was accused federally of fraud.
Yeah.
He went to trial and he lost, but then after the trial it was learned that the prosecutor improperly withheld exculpatory evidence and the conviction was overturned.
Wow. Sometimes when these things occur, that all cases that particular judge monitored and decided over are either retried or dropped. Does that happen really?
Well, it should, but like in this case, if they suspected that the juvenile judge handled cases inappropriately,
yeah,
each case should be in reviewed individually for the facts, the victim interviewed, the arresting officer, the probation officer, but none of that was done. They were just all tossed because it was expedient.
Yeah. And for political reasons?
Political reasons were a lot of public officials were so taken aback by the allegations of Kids for Cash, they distanced themselves to such an extent that they presumed it happened so that they could pretend that they weren't near it, that they didn't support it. It was a disaster.
Yeah, sometimes I get confused between social pressure and actual law because I hear judges handing down sentences that are based on teaching a lesson so that society understands or societal or political pressure was so strong that they had no choice. And I know it's not, the legal system is not perfect. They keep saying that all the time. They're kind of drilling into my head. We do it, but it's not perfect.
It's true. It's not perfect.
But and then there's the caveat after that, but it's the best we have.
Well, it's the best we have, and the principles underneath it or holding it up are good principles, but they're not always upheld.
Mm.
People want to see their name in the paper. They like to be considered, zealous and against crime.
Mm-hmm.
But some cases just should not be brought, and other cases should not be overblown, like this one was.
You know, we use a term now, and a certain guy in the White House started this stupid term, fake news. But fake news is one thing. I mean, but this actually apparently got into this case somehow.
Very much so. Before it was coined, fake news.
Yeah.
It was like a term called parrot journalism. When you see a newspaper article written and it's based on allegations, but then that article exists, so other journalists cite that article as proof, and it turns out to be a circular repetition of what was baseless allegations in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. What's the lesson from this case, this book actually?
Well, I think the lesson is to really hold your public officials to account.
Mm-hmm.
To don't accept everything they say as truth. Like you had said, fake news is abundant.
Yeah.
You have to investigate, and if you have to investigate yourself, like I did for years to write this book, then do it. Just to get down to the facts of the matter. Don't just believe everything you read and hear, especially on the internet and Facebook.
I know. Or whatever, whoever pays for the ad so it appears up on top on the page.
Exactly.
I mean, this is a scary world, I got to tell you. But I think you know that as much as anybody, Lorna. the book's called The Presumption of Guilt. And it is a fascinating read, I must say. It's How the Kids for Cash Scandal Trampled Justice. And the book's available everywhere. It better be. Otherwise, I think you'll probably be mad.
no, it is available.
It available everywhere. How does somebody follow you and your writings and such?
Well, there's a website for the book, presumptionofguilt.net.
Okay.
And that has a link to my blog of LornaNGraham.com, mm-hmm. where I've been blogging about criminal justice and other the book and other things regarding my experience as a career federal prosecutor.
Very good. What are you doing now these days? Are you still in that game?
I'm not in the criminal justice game. Mm-hmm. I'm a full-time author. I'm working on another book regarding other experiences I had in the office, but this next book will be a novel.
Yeah. That's cool. I mean, there's a fascination with legal stuff in this country. I mean, we really get into it. There's tons of TV shows. Of course, your book will be turned into one. Well, who knows?
But hopefully.
Who knows? But yeah, there is a fascination with that because it's not only a social thing and a justice thing, but it's also like a Game of Thrones. It's a game as well. With rules and regulations, and you can't do this, but you can't do that. We're not going to allow this. It's
very kinda, well put. That's very true.
It's very fascinating. All right. Well, one more time, your website.
My website, the blog, is LornaNGraham.com, right. And the book's website is presumptionofguilt.net.
Yes, .net, ladies and gentlemen. Makes a difference. thank you so much for your time today. It's been fascinating. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, and you have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There you go. I'm done. I hope this has been as enjoyable for you as it could have been for me. But nonetheless, have yourselves a wonderful day. It's totally up to you what you make good and what you make bad. Make everything good. And I'll be with you the next time a weekday rolls around. Until then, I wish you peace.